Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 7, 2015. A top humanitarian official says the ongoing conflict in South Sudan is affecting families.
They need to consider the plight of their people, particularly at this time when the rains have come and there is a significant opportunity for families to go out and tend for their crops.
And traders in Bor Town are cutting the size of bread while increasing its price.
Those days it was a 3 for £1, and nowadays it's only 2 for £1. And the size also, they have reduced the size. It was somehow wide in business, very tiny like this.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Deputy UN Humanitarian Coordinator for South Sudan says he is deeply concerned that the conflict in South Sudan continues to restrict civilians' freedom of movement and limit the ability of farmers to cultivate their land. Vincent Lilley is calling on the warring parties in South Sudan to give access to farmers to plant crops, tend to their livestock, and trade without fear of violence.
Tensions in Upper Nile State have continued to remain high, and as a result, an estimated 4,550 people have fled from their homes to the Unmis base in Malakal since the 2nd of April. Food is being distributed to them soon, and aid agencies are accessing to them health services and water supply at the UN base. And we are entering into the rainy season that enables them to plant, to tend for their livestock, and to move freely to find livelihoods for themselves. While this is important, they then have to run away to shelter in the UN bases.
What is the impact of this fighting in Upper Nile on the work of humanitarian aid agencies in South Sudan?
The government of the Republic of South Sudan has noted that 2.5 million people are severely food insecure, and if measures are not taken to support the families to produce food for themselves, to move freely and take care of their livestock, this number could easily increase, and this is not good for the country. Therefore, a safe and secure environment is necessary, not only for the families who desperately need to manage their livelihoods, but also for the humanitarian workers to reach as many people in need as is possible with life-saving aid and other assistance to make them produce food for themselves in order to grow out of the need for assistance.
What are some of the challenges that you face as you go to reach people who are moving farther and farther away from where help is supposed to be given to them?
South Sudan is a very big country, and there are no roads. And when the rains come, even the few roads are not passable well. And therefore, the only way to reach people where they are is through air support. And flying is very, very expensive. And only a few people can be taken to those areas to provide assistance at any one time. And therefore, the capacity to reach as many people is limited by logistics.
Is it safe for your workers to go to these remote areas? Because we understand there were cases of UN employees being detained or harassed whenever they go out to help people.
The ongoing violence does not in any way target humanitarians. There is no direct targeting of humanitarians. However, the nature of the violence makes them feel unsafe. As a result, for example, on the 6th of April yesterday, 10 aid workers were evacuated from a place called Kodok in Upper Nile back to Juba due to the increasing tensions. And when they were evacuated, they had to come back to Juba, leaving many people who needed assistance behind. This is the example I could give of situations where humanitarian assistance is not reaching people at a time when they are in dire need.
Which agency evacuated their staff from Kodok yesterday?
Usually we don't identify agencies because we would otherwise have to seek their authorization. The key message is that there are several humanitarian organizations that were involved. It was not just one agency, it was several organizations because we work in a coordinated way.
If you have one message to give to the leaders of the country, what would your message be?
It is that they need to consider the plight of their people, particularly at this time when the rains have come and there is a significant opportunity for families to go out and tend for their crops, take care of their livestock, and recover their livelihoods again. This is the time when violence and displacement needs to stop, to enable them to manage their lives.
That's Vincent Lilley, UN Deputy Humanitarian Coordinator for South Sudan. He was speaking to me earlier today from Juba. Now, as part of our series of stories on the rising price of food in South Sudan, we look at one of the most basic foods, bread. In Bor, surging prices of commodities have forced traders to reduce portion size of bread and increase the cost. Ordinary South Sudanese are unhappy about the rising cost of bread, but say there is not much they can do about it. Philip Tonaleu has this report from Bor on shrinking loaves and skyrocketing prices.
In the middle of Bor main market, consumers move from one shop to another, trying to negotiate a fair price for food with traders. Few of the shoppers appear to be having much success. Surging costs of commodities have affected that price of everything here in Maral Market. Flour, cooking oil, onions, all have seen prices spike upward. The rising prices has led to a significant increase in the cost of everything, including bread, says a chopper named Hassan Sebi Taban.
Those days it was a 3 for £1, and now this is only 2 for £1. And the size also, they have reduced the size. It was somehow wide. Business very tiny like this.
The loaf of bread that Taban pulls out of his back to show me is about the size of a 7-year-old child's hand and wrist. Taban says consumers are spending more and more money to buy the same amount of food. In a nearby restaurant, a consumer named James agrees with Taban. James says that these days, if you want to eat your fill of fried meat and bread, you have to buy more than just one meal.
If you ask for one order of fried meat, you will see only 3 pieces on the plate and your small side of potatoes. What you have to do is to order 3 plates and then you pull them together.
The problem with that is that each plate of fried meat served with 2 small pieces of bread costs around 10 South Sudanese pounds here in Bor. That is a portion when you consider that many people live on less than $1 a day in this town. Abdallah Abdarrahim owns a bakery in Bor. Abdarrahim says he understands why people are upset about the rising price of food, especially bread. But he says the situation is out of his control. He says the price of a 50-kilogram bag of flour has increased sharply since the middle of last year, when it cost 250 South Sudanese pounds.
It is now between 360 and 375 South Sudanese pounds. This cuts into our profit margin. We have had to reduce the size of the bread we sell.
Taban says traders told him the skyrocketing bread price are the result of the South Sudanese pound losing value against the United States dollar. Most of the food sold in South Sudan is imported or made from imported materials. Merchants pay for the imported food in dollars. On the black market in Bor, $1 costs 7.5 South Sudanese pounds. At a commercial bank in Juba, merchants will pay 3.2 South Sudanese pounds for $1. But only a few traders from Bor can travel the 190 kilometers to Juba to buy dollars at the more favorable exchange rates. Abraham Cholkech is a member of Jonglei State Chamber of Commerce. Kaich says the only way out of the food price dilemma is to invest in agriculture.
You know, the demand is high and the prices are continuing. They are going up. You know, we have been trying to see if we can set up the farmers union. And the traders see it as a business. you know, I think they can produce more food and that will reduce the price of food.
Kai says people need to focus on producing food locally instead of importing it from neighboring countries. But in order for local farming to be a success on large scale, there has to be security in rural areas. And at the moment, that is not the case. Insecurity is rampant in villages and the countryside. So for now, Taban says, the only option is for South Sudanese to grit their teeth and dig deeper and deeper into their pockets when they go to the market to buy their daily bread. For VOA News, I am Pilipton Aleu in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Unity State. Officials in Lake State say more than 20 people were killed and dozens wounded when armed men attacked several cattle camps on Sunday. The officials say the suspected attackers are believed to be from neighboring Unity State. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
Daniel Dio Matwet, deputy chief whip of the ruling SPLM party and chair of the Lake State Caucus in the National Assembly, says the cattle camps that were attacked are in the Maper area in Rumbek North County.
They got the people were relaxing and they attacked four cattle camps. It was almost a fight of the whole day. We heard that 26 people were killed from the side of Rumbek North, plus 50 wounded. We don't know what happened on the other side because they were running to their area with the part of cattle which they took.
Zakaria Matur represents Lake State in the National Assembly. He says three of the attackers were killed. He describes the assailants as, quote, rebels and bandits, unquote.
It was in the cattle camps. There were three cattle camps on the eastern part of Rumbek North called Luel. Nuez came there to attack the three cattle camps for the purpose of raiding the cattle.
Dio says he suspects the attackers came from Unity State.
These people are from Payenjar County, which is controlled by the rebels of Riek Machar. According to those who have seen them, some were dressing in uniform and they were carrying these big guns. So this is why they defeated this side.
The two lawmakers say the attackers stole thousands of cattle. They say local youths were able to recover some of the stolen livestock. Matur says the attackers targeted a village far from where SPLA soldiers are based in Lake State.
It is deployed. It is in the north, inside town, the headquarters of the country. It is inside town. But these are cattle camps, of course. They know where the SPLA is. They avoided. They went to where the cattle are because they wanted both to kill and also to raid cattle for the ratio.
Cattle raids are common in South Sudan and have become more deadly because of the huge number of firearms in the country. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Today is World Health Day, and we take a look at efforts to control a highly communicable disease at one of the country's most overcrowded prisons. That story is coming up.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you think your country can attract tourists?
We should involve so much in peace, you know, through peace. It can make the country like to discover its nature. When you look at South Sudan, even the trees are sick of the war. So if people are in peace, there are so many beautiful places up there.
First of all, by setting up a tight security for the tourists and then cleaning up these places that the tourists will be visiting.
To attract tourists, we need to fight corruption. We need to create roads. When tourists come from, they should be able to move about freely. We should remove these gendarmes and police people who extort money from people who want to move freely in the country.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It is time for our Tuesday health segment on this World Health Day, where South Sudan is joining countries around the world to mark this important day. Authorities at Wau's Central Prison in Western Bahr al-Ghazalstad say an outbreak of a highly contagious skin disease known as scabies has prompted a major hygiene campaign at a prison where hundreds of inmates have contracted the disease. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more on this story for VOA from Wau.
Wau Central Prison Director Sisa Tombe says the prison hygiene campaign began after the International Committee of Red Cross, or ICRC, launched a five-day treatment exercise at the main prison. A doctor from the ICRC who visited the prison 3 months ago confirmed that scabies is the biggest health problem affecting inmates. Scabies is a skin infection caused by insects called mites. These parasites burrow under the skin, causing intense itching and can lead to boils, mostly on the fingers and buttocks. The ICRC treatment program ended last Friday. Officials say 231 inmates were suffering from the disease. Tombe says the best way to curb the spread of scabies is to ensure general cleanliness.
The measures to be taken, first of all, we have to see that there is a serious provision in making hygiene. We have to see that everybody has to take bath twice in a day, and when we see that all the clothes are to be clean. And then one or two reasons that make the disease to circulate inside the prison is overcrowding.
The Wau Central Prison was built in the 1940s to accommodate 200 people. Today, more than 400 prisoners are squeezed into the prison, which creates a perfect breeding ground for scabies. Tombe says the male wards are the problem areas.
Most of the infections are in the southern wards, and these are the majority of people who are affected. Because most of them are remand prisoners, they are being released anytime. Female section have no infection because their number is very less, and they are good enough in cleaning, in the hygiene. And some of the organization like SIHA is concerned about the female. So there is no infection in female section. And then in the cells also there is no infection because everybody is in his own cells.
Acknowledging the prison is extremely congested, administrators have made arrangements to transfer some inmates to the county prison in Raja.
We are going to solve this overcrowding by making transfer to other prisons which are having less inmates, like Western or within the Western Bahr al-Ghazal, it's Raja Prison. It is within our authority. The state director is the one to transfer. And then to Western Equatoria, Yambio, they got approval from our director general, and we are going to transfer some to Western Equatoria.
Tombe is calling on humanitarian aid organizations to provide prisons like his with more cleaning materials, including soap and detergents, and to educate inmates about the importance of practicing personal hygiene. A similar scabies outbreak was reported in 2012, but was quickly contained. Today, with a huge number of inmates, combined with the fact that Wau Central Prison admits inmates from neighboring states, the overcrowded correction houses is particularly vulnerable to the spread of highly contagious disease like scabies. However, prison officials say they are doing everything they can to avoid future outbreak. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting from Western Bahr al-Ghazal Estate. Wow.
A South Sudanese delegation traveled to Kigali yesterday in time to participate in today's International Day of Remembrance of the Victims of the Rwanda Genocide. The 1994 genocide against the Tutsis left nearly a million people dead. The South Sudanese delegation say they want to honor how Rwanda has emerged from the horrifying chapter to become a model of development in the region. From Kigali, Mungume Devs Rakarinj has this report.
A group of youth sing requiem songs as Rwanda's President Paul Kagame lights a flame of hope
before leading hundreds of people at Kigali's Genocide Memorial in commemoration of the genocide that left a million Tutsis dead in just a span of 100 days. They were slain by their fellow countrymen. A day earlier, Christine Naboy Peter, a woman activist from South Sudan's Eastern Equatorial State, says she felt paralyzed with horror at some of the sites she visited. As a mother, the thought of mass slaughter of children haunts her.
It feels so painful to see the death of the innocent people, especially the children. Passing through all the massacre sites just make me sick yesterday, and I reflect of what took place back at home.
Speaking at today's event, President Paul Kagame chastised the international community for standing by as hundreds of thousands of people were being brutally murdered. He said Rwandans have been able to achieve what they have so far because of their resilient spirit.
A small country, Rwanda, in the middle of nowhere, in this continent of ours, that has many other problems. But a small country in the middle of nowhere, of people, a country of people, people who have pride in themselves, who are ready for peace and for war for our lives. We are ready for both. It's for peace, we are more than ready. It's for war to take us back into our past. We are more than ready to fight that war.
And the president says his countrymen will ensure what happened in 1994 never happens again.
This country has changed. It will never be the same. It has changed for good and forever.
Members of the South Sudan delegation here say they know all too well about genocide. The International Crisis Group says thousands of people were ethnically targeted and killed in the aftermath of the December 2013 crisis in Juba. Naboy Peter says she videotaped some of the places she visited to share with her countrymen back in Eastern Equatorial State. She hopes sharing the video will help change the attitude about the destructive effect of tribalism. Augustino Cole Deng is the executive director of the South Sudan Youth for Peace and Development Organization, which organized this trip. He believes there's a strong parallel between what happened in Rwanda and what is happening in his country today.
What we have learned, the genocide of the Tutsi started in some years back, but it started with the issues of killing. It disappears, it comes back.
Cole says he has also learned that Rwanda's development has been a success because Rwandans identified one main goal: fight ethnicity and forge unity as one people. He says that is the lesson he will take back to young South Sudanese.
We can begin planting seeds to the generation now, which is coming now. For leave the generation behind, try to plant this. All in all, one time, there will be total peace in South Sudan.
For VO News, I am Mugume Devs Ruakarinj in Kigali, Rwanda.
From Rwanda, we move to Kenya, where leaders from the northeastern part of the country have said they will name sympathizers, fighters, and financiers of Somali militant group Al-Shabaab. The pledge comes after Al-Shabaab gunmen killed nearly 150 students at Kenya's Garissa University College. Analysts say it will be difficult to name the group's supporters in a region where people are divided along clan lines and the threat of Al-Shabaab looms over any attempt to help government agencies. For VOA News, Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Days after Al-Shabaab gunmen killed 148 students at Garissa University College, leaders from northeastern Kenya near the Somali border have promised to help security organs identify youths who have joined the Islamist extremist group, as well as their sympathizers and financiers. Parliament Majority Leader and lawmaker from the northeast, Aden Duale, says they will reveal the names within a few weeks.
We recognize the reality of collaborators among us, our communities, and we will, with immediate effect, commence to identify them, to document them, and to expose all the members, the financiers, and sympathizers of Al-Shabaab within the next 1 month.
Investigators are currently trying to learn more about the identity of the four attackers. One of the suspected attackers was a son of a local chief in Mandera County and a law school graduate. In 2013, the father reported his son to the authorities and told them he suspected his son might have joined Al-Shabaab. The Interior Ministry says Mohamed Mohamud, best known as Gamadere, was the mastermind of the attack and still on the run. Kenyan authorities has offered a $215,000 reward for his arrest. Independent security analyst Abdulwahab Sheikh Abdi Samad says clan division in the northeast will complicate efforts to identify other supporters of the terror group.
In Mandera County, all the clans in that county, they are in conflict one way or another. Unless they reconcile them, unless they bring on board, it's difficult, to come up the list. If it bring a list, then the other county says, okay, most of these lists are from certain clan. That's the consider for witch hunting.
In his speech to the nation on Saturday, President Uhuru Kenyatta said the task of countering terrorism in Kenya has been made difficult by the fact the planners and financiers of terrorist acts are embedded in Kenyan communities. Duale knows there is radicalization taking place within Muslim community and institutions. He says there is a need to revamp the religious institutions and educators.
We recognize that some of our religious institutions have had some role in radicalization and the propagation of this ideology. To address this challenge, we, in collaboration with the county governments, the Supreme Council of Kenya Muslims, and the Council of Imams, we will immediately undertake a review of all personalities and institutions involved in the religious activities.
Abdi Samad agrees there is a problem, but people who provide information about the militant group's activities must be protected.
The financiers, for instance, how are they going to pick the one who financed Al-Shabaab? Those who disclose the financiers, how are they going to be safe? Today, if they name one financier, those who name that financier, they'll be victims. They'll be a victim of Al-Shabaab.
An Interior Ministry spokesman, Muenda Njoka, tells VOA the government welcomes the cooperation of Muslim leaders as authorities investigate the names provided to them in the ongoing probe. 3 days of national mourning end Tuesday. Families of 126 of the student killed in Garissa have been identified, 65 of them through fingerprints. The process of identification is still ongoing at a city mortuary, as families await the clearance to receive the bodies of their children for burial. Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song You Are One in a Million by Ugandan musician Justin Simpleman. We have been listening to Justin Simpleman with the song You Are One in a Million. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your cars and homes. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.